This meeting is being recorded.
This is the time and place set for the workshop on proposed regulations pertaining to Chapter 649 of the Nevada Administrative Code, as provided by Senate Bill 276, as described by the Notice of Workshop, dated and posted on October 16, 2023. This workshop is scheduled for 10 a.m. and is being recorded. Today is Thursday, November 2nd, 2023, and the time is 10:03 a.m. Financial Institutions Division staff present at today's meeting is Commissioner Sandy O'Loughlin, Senior Deputy Attorney General Louis Soka, Examiner and Your Coordinator for today, Jennifer Ramsey, Administrative Assistant Devin Owens, and myself, Deputy Commissioner Mary Young. If you have not already done so, please take the time to mute your telephone or microphone until called upon by the coordinator to provide public comment. Also, please turn off your video. And also, please silence your phones and electronics. Again, this workshop is being recorded. If joining by web, please activate chat by clicking the dialogue balloon and enter your information on the sign-in sheet for the meeting record. If joining by phone, please email FIDmaster at fid.state.nv.us to request to sign the form. Those who wish to provide public comment here in the room, please come to the table when I begin the public comment portion of the workshop. It is important to emphasize that the purpose of this workshop is to obtain input from all interested parties in the process of adopting regulations pursuant to NRS 649. In today's workshop, we will be soliciting general comments regarding the subject matter contained in each section of the proposed regulation. I will be summarizing each section of the proposed regulation today. After those sections have been read, we will take comment on those specific sections. We will now move on to item number 2 on the agenda, public comment. This time is to provide general comment for the record. If you wish to comment on a specific section of the proposed regulation, please hold your comment until we reach that specific section during the presentation. There will also be an opportunity to provide general public comment prior to closing of the workshop. There is no need to restate a comment already made. If you have written material that you would like to submit, please hand it to Devin Owens or email it to fidmaster at fid.state.nv.us. Public comment will be limited to 3 minutes per person or less due to time constraints. Comments will be taken first from web participants and then phone participants, and then we will take comment from those here in Las Vegas. For those who joined us virtually, you may provide public comment by typing an X in the chat box or by calling the toll-free number on the agenda at 1-844-621-3956. Please wait to be recognized by the coordinator before unmuting your phone or microphone to comment. Clearly state and spell your first and last name and clearly state your business affiliation before you begin your comment. Okay, we are now taking comments. Jennifer, do we have any comments from those that joined us by the web?
We have no commenters on the web.
Okay. Do we have any commenters that joined us by phone? Not hearing any public comment by those who joined us by phone. Do we have anyone here in Las Vegas that would like to provide general public comment at this time? Okay, not hearing or seeing that anyone would like to provide comment at this time, we'll move on to item number 3, the presentation of the proposed regulation. Okay, I will summarize the sections of the proposed regulation. After those sections are read, I will take comment on those specific sections. When it's time for comment, the same format as general public comment will be followed, which is comments will be taken first from those individuals that joined in by the web, second from those individuals that joined in by phone, and lastly from those here in Las Vegas. Okay, sections 3 and 4 of the regulation define principal place of business and affiliate. If anyone wishes to offer comment on sections 3 or 4, now is the time to do so. Jennifer, do you have any comments from those who joined us by the web?
We have Robin Sabano.
Okay, good morning.
It's Robin Sabo, with Sabo Associates out of Atlanta. I have comment on sections 7, 8, 9, and 10, and I'll hold till that time.
Oh, okay. We'll make sure we get you back on that. Okay, is there anyone that would like to provide comment on sections 3 and 4 at this time? Any by the phone?
No phone commenters.
Okay. Anyone here in Las Vegas that would like to provide comment? And on sections 3 and 4? Okay. Not seeing or hearing at this time. We will continue. Sections 5, 6, 7 and 13 is removing reference to foreign collection agency and changing certificate to license, since foreign collection agency has been removed from the law through SB 276, as well as clarifying travel costs if the division conducts an examination at an out-of-state license location. If anyone wishes to offer comments on Section 5, 6, 7, or 13, now is the time to do so. Does anyone would like to provide a comment from the web? Anyone would like to provide a comment that joined us by phone on those sections?
Comments by phone.
Anyone that here joined us in Vegas would like to provide a comment on Sections 5, 6, 7, and 13? Not seeing or hearing any at this time, we will continue. Section 8 is removing NAC 649-086, the public records section, since SB 276 provides for all records to remain confidential. Section 9 originally was changing the application and licensing fee for collection agencies. However, after the division received comments from small businesses, we decided not to raise these fees and they will remain as is. Sections 10 and 11 remove the branch requirements from regulation, since SB 276 removed the requirement to have branch locations. If an agency wishes to license multiple locations, they may do so by applying for an additional license, but it will not be considered a branch license, just an additional location. Section 12 changes the application and initial licensing fees for the compliance manager from $335 to $485, the annual renewal from $30 to $35, and the reinstatement fee from $45 to $50. If anyone wishes to offer comments on Sections 8 through 12, now's the time to do so. Do we have anyone that would like to provide a comment that joined us by the web?
No web comments.
No, he's 15. Does anyone like to provide comments that joined us by the phone?
No phone comments.
Anyone would like to provide a comment here in Las Vegas on Sections 8 through 12? Okay, not hearing or seeing.
Maybe somebody was speaking in his mouth before.
I think that's Robin. Robin, were you trying to provide a comment? You're on mute.
I'm going to wait for, I was thinking you're going to be talking about the Senate bill, but my comments are on NAC chapter 23, 24, and 25. So I know you haven't
gotten
to that yet.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were. Thank you. Okay. All right, not seeing or hearing any comments on those sections, we will continue. Sections 14, 15, 16, 17, 19, 20, 21, and 22 add to the term compliance to read compliance manager instead of manager. And Section 14 changes the current language of management, operation, and administration to oversight and compliance. Per recent discussion with LCB, Section 15, NAC 649, Section 220 will be repealed from NAC 649, since Section 30 of SB 276 overrides this section. If anyone wishes to offer comment on Sections 14, 15, 16, 17, 19, 20, 21, or 22, now is the time to do so. Do we have anyone that joined us by web that would like to provide comment on those sections?
We have no comments from the web.
Anyone would like to provide comment?
No.
That joined us by phone?
We have Colin Winkler.
Okay, Winkler, we are ready for your comment.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to note that Andy Madden for ETA had a comment.
Okay, we're ready for your comment. Mr. Madden.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Thank you, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, awesome. Okay. Andy Madden with ACA International, a trade association representing third-party collection agencies, asset buyers, creditors, and attorneys, all in the collection space. On Section 14, I'd like to comment, the proposal states the compliance manager must be available in person at the principal place of business of the agency in order to perform his or her required duties. Will the compliance manager be required to be physically on site at all times, or does the ability to properly maintain direct supervision, whether in person or through virtual means, satisfy this requirement. The same technology that allows an agent to work remotely, safely, and in full compliance with all federal state laws provides that exact same level of direct access, supervision, and compliance to any compliance manager. So would a compliance manager be required to be on site even if all or most of their agents are working remotely or while visiting a branch office? We respectfully request additional clarification on this issue.
Yes, thank you for your question. The intent is to, yes, have the compliance manager along with any of the top officers be at the physical principal place of business at all times. Kind of like how the QM or the qualified manager was required to be at the license location full time, that is also the same intent for the compliance manager. Did that answer your question, Mr. Madden?
Yes, but that does answer. I'm not sure if that was necessarily the intent of the legislation as it was going through, but that does answer my question.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other commenters joining us by web or phone?
We have Colin Winkler.
I do just have a follow-up on the compliance manager requirements under Section 14.1. Which would require a compliance manager to have, quote, direct supervisory responsibility. I don't recall that language from the statute, and I was wondering if the NFIB had any intention of providing more specificity around what direct supervisory responsibility might mean.
Thank you for your question. We didn't have any intent to provide more about direct supervisory responsibility. That language is current language in the current NAC right now. We did not change that language. So we just left it as is, which must have direct supervisory responsibility for employees.
We have Brian Patridge.
Brian, we're ready for your comment. Mr. Winkler, I'm sorry, I forgot to have you state your first and last name and spell it and your affiliation before you spoke. I'm sorry. If you can please do that for me now.
Sure. Colin Winkler, ACA International, COLINWINJALER.
Thank you. Is Brian?
Let me make sure he's not muted.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good, okay, sorry, I guess I was muted on my mic and on my online here, so I apologize for that. My name's Brian Partridge. I'm an attorney, a creditor's rights attorney in Nevada, and I represent clients all over the justice courts and the district courts, and some of them will be affected by this regulation and by the changes to that were introduced by SB 276 and their amendments. So I have some concerns that I want to share about some of the regulations. Starting with Section 38, or sorry, Draft Regulation 7, which says that a copy of all trust account statements as applicable are required and a report of financial standing must be presented to the department before the licenses can be renewed. And the Section 38.5 of SB 276 says that some debt collectors aren't required to have trust accounts. So I'm not sure if the as applicable is pointing to that, but I wanted to point that out because it might need to be clearer. Because obviously those debt buyers in that situation are exempt the trust account requirements in the statute, but it's not clear to me from the regulation as it's drafted if that is intentional to exclude them or if it's just an as applicable, because I think the as applicable was already in the regulation. It wasn't added. Maybe it was moved from a previous place to be there right after the trust account statements. So that's one thing I'm concerned about.
I do have it. Thank you.
With that regulation.
I can clear that up. For a minute. The as applicable
okay.
is just for collection agencies that are collecting on behalf of another. So that would not apply to debt buyers, which goes with section 34 of SB 276, section 34, subsection 5, which talks about the trust accounts and says that this section does not apply to a debt buyer who is not also collecting claims on behalf of parties who are not affiliated with the debt buyer. So we just added that additional as applicable in the regulation to kind of tie that to that section to make it clear
okay.
that if you're not collecting, if you're not holding money for someone else, you don't need a trust account.
Got it.
Okay.
Makes sense to me.
Okay.
I had another, if I have, I don't know how much time I have, but I have a couple of other questions.
That's okay. I took some of your time, so we'll give you a couple extra minutes there.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. So the regulations also, if a debt buyer can be affiliated and share a license with a collection agency under section 18, subsection 4 of SB 276 and section 31.1 of the draft regulations, it doesn't address, as I see it, it does not address how the bond amount of the licensee would be calculated, because in section 21, subsection 3, it sets the bond amount based on the average monthly balance in the licensee's trust account, but there's two entities sharing a license in that situation with the debt buyer affiliated with the licensee. So is that, and debt buyers may not have a trust account, so does that just mean that the bond is set based on just what the licensee has in the trust account? The collection agency that had the license, not the debt buyer? Or is there some other calculation that's going to be used?
Good question.
Thanks. I tried really hard to think of good questions.
No, that's good.
And comments.
I guess, again, the bond does go by the trust account. So I guess it's going to be based upon the actual... the activity that our licensee is doing, the debt buyer, and some of our debt buyers may be third-party collection agencies as well. So if they're holding a trust account,
sure.
I think it's going to be all trust accounts together. And again, the max of the surety bond is $60,000 anyway. So I think a lot of our licensees will probably go on the safe side and just get the max $60,000. But again, it's going to be based
Understood.
On the trust account balances. So that was going to be based upon what we see during the examination and what licensing sees upon initial licensing. Application. So it's going to be case by case.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. And I did have one other concern about, and these all kind of relate to the affiliates and sharing licenses, but this one has to do with the compliance manager, because in the SB 276, I believe it's section 30, subsection 2 says that a compliance manager may simultaneously be employed as a compliance manager by a collection agency and an affiliate of that agency. But the regulation seems to suggest that to do that, you need prior approval from the commissioner, which is subsection 2, oh, sorry, it's, I think that's section 30.
And
or maybe it's, oh, no, it's section 15, I'm sorry. Of the draft regulation.
Right.
So,
that's an easy answer. We're repealing that section. After talking to LCB right before this workshop, we're repealing section 15, NAC 649.220.
Okay. Then I guess I don't need to worry about that. Okay. Good to know. I think that's all I had for major concerns, but I think that covers it. So thank you for your time and letting me comment and ask some questions. And I appreciate the consideration you guys have already given some of these issues. So thank you.
Right. Thank you for your comment. Do we have anyone else joining us by phone that would like to provide a comment?
have no phone callers.
Okay, here in Las Vegas.
Yes. Good morning. My name is David Reed, and I serve as general counsel to the Receivables Management Association International. RMAI is a nonprofit trade association representing businesses that purchase or support the purchase of receivables on the secondary market. These businesses include banks, credit unions, debt buying companies, and collection agencies. RMAI, as the primary organization that sought the introduction and passage of SB 276, is largely supportive of the rules that have been proposed as being consistent with the legislation's intent. The only question concerning the proposed rules that we are not entirely certain we are on the same page with FID is whether passive debt buying companies will be able to share a single license with affiliated businesses. Prior to the issuance of the proposed rules, one of RMAI's members was informed by FID staff that they would be required to have three licenses for six businesses, despite only one of those businesses actually having employees. During the statutory development, RMAI thought NRS 649.305 and 649.075 would have allowed for these six companies to share a single license with a single compliance manager. NRS 649305, pertinent language reads, a compliance manager may be simultaneously employed as a compliance manager by a collection agency and an affiliate of that collection agency. And then NRS 649.075, the relevant language reads, a debt buyer may share a single license as a collection agency with a person affiliated with the debt buyer if the affiliated person does not engage in any collection activities other than purchasing claims. I know it's a little confusing sometimes some of the debt buying models of active debt buyers, passive debt buyers. I know one of the questions that frequently comes up is why is there these affiliated companies that have no employees. They tend to be financing vehicles that they're incorporated just to purchase specific accounts, which then once the accounts are purchased, they're transferred to the entity that has the employees where all the business takes place under. The other possibility is a purchase company. Sometimes, you know, they purchase another debt buying company, and rather than unwind the business of that company that they purchase, they just simply transfer all the accounts over to, again, a single company where the employees are based. So that's the only question that RMAI has is will those companies be able to share a single compliance manager with a single license?
Share a compliance manager with a single license. A compliance manager is required per licensed entity.
Correct.
So if we're licensing the one debt buyer,
yes,
and that's the one license, all those affiliates that are not maintaining the license, that are just sharing that license, will not need to have a compliance manager because they're not going to be licensed. So that compliance manager goes with the licensed location, the licensed entity, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So does that answer your question?
I think so. And actually, it might have been semantics because originally I think I might see where the confusion came in. We had originally envisioned that those debt buying companies that were sharing a license would all be technically licensed companies, not unlicensed companies sharing a license. So what I hear you saying is if you have a licensed company that's sharing a license with, let's say, five other companies where there's no employees, then in that scenario, that licensed company will only be required to have one compliance manager.
One compliance manager, one license,
and
they have to be affiliated, all debt buyers.
All affiliated.
And then the affiliates have to be the passive debt buyers. So you
Correct.
Have your debt buyer, and then you have your passive debt buyers that can share that debt buyer's license. And then that licensee, has the burden and all the liability of everything that those affiliates do. So if we find out that there are employees at those affiliates, then they will probably have to have a license with us because then if they're doing the calling, if they're doing the actual calling and collecting, and I think that was a discussion that we had during session.
There are many different types of models. This is just
right.
one model. And I would say that, the primary company where the employees are based is a debt buying company within that family. But I'm wondering if the FID would interpret that as a collection agency, because they are taking the accounts from their affiliated debt buying companies and then collecting on them in-house. They are not collecting on behalf of anybody outside of the family of companies, though.
But they are collecting on behalf of another, so.
They're collecting on behalf of the company, the debt buying companies within the family.
But do they own the debt 100%?
Yes, yes.
So that the collection agency, in order for it to be a debt buyer in our interpretation, is the debt buyer has to own that debt 100%. They can't have any kind of revenue sharing. So if they're collecting on behalf of another, that would fall under the third party collections, and then they would need to have the trust account, possibly. Again, this is going to probably be based on, like you said, each business model, so that's something that we will have to look at very closely during licensing and during an examination.
Well, the title to the debt will remain with the company that has no employees. It's just simply transferred over for collection purposes to a...
Because they're the passive debt buyer.
Correct, yeah.
No, I think that meets the intent then, is what you just said.
Okay.
I think this is going to be something we're going to have to look at your business model
right.
to make sure that we're truly licensing you in the correct way.
Yeah.
Because, Lewis, is that kind of how you're reading of the intent? Is if
yeah.
it's a debt buyer, one if licensed if, debt buyer can
yeah.
share the...
If it's just a passive pass-through without employees,
yeah.
that's a different
yeah.
scenario than if it's truly another independent entity.
Yeah, no, that was the challenge. I recognize this is a new stat, new language, and people are getting used to it. That was the challenge that was portrayed by one of our members to us. Well, how's that going to work if we don't have employees? How is there supposed to be a compliance
right.
manager?
Correct, and we agree with that. We don't want to license just like you had said, like a
yeah.
file cabinet, just
right.
to license someone. It has to make sense. So again, it's going to be based upon the relationships and the actual business model per licensee that we see. But
all right.
But the basics of it is what we just kind of explained. So.
Okay, excellent. And just a quick follow-up question to what Andy Madden from ACA had inquired regarding the compliance manager being on-site. Is the expectation that the compliance manager will be on-site for the entire day during the business day? I mean, because if obviously lunch break, someone goes on vacation, what's the intention of
that? That language we didn't really change that language. It's just that the compliance manager has to be on site or be available full time at the license location. So of course they're going to have vacation and whatnot. A lot of our agencies currently, before this delay came into place, they would just have a secondary manager to back that up for if necessary. So there just has to be a compliance manager that's responsible for the day to day operations of the collection agency. And current regulation requires that to be at the license location. So we just kind of continued on with that.
So your advice to companies would be have more than one compliance?
No, that's not my advice. That's
okay.
what a lot of our agencies had chose to do,
okay.
Just to be on the safe side. But that's
okay.
that's a business decision.
Got it.
It's just something we've seen out there that they've done that. So,
okay.
But,
thank you.
But we do understand vacations are needed. So. So. And
right.
can you please spell your name for the record?
Sure, absolutely. My apologies. First name is David, D-A-V-I-D. Last name is Reed, R-E-I-D.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate it.
Okay. Do we have anyone else here in Las Vegas that would like to provide comments on those sections? Okay, not seeing anyone here in Las Vegas. We will continue. Okay, section 18. Changes the reference to the credit union statute from NRS 678-755 to NRS 672-755 since the statute number changed. This section is in 649 to allow for the trust account to be maintained at a private insured credit union approved by the division. Sections 23 and 24 add requirements for collectors working remotely to comply with Section 7, 8, and 9 of SB 276, such as a copy of the signed agreement, copy of the training program provided to the collector, dates the collector received training, the dates the collector received direct oversight from a supervisor, and the date the collector started working remotely, and a copy of its policies and procedures. Section 25 makes it clear that all recordings of telephone calls shall be provided to the division upon request. This section applies to all collection calls, both at the principal place of business and remote locations. We received a written comment prior to the workshop regarding these sections. The question was if collection agents and the collection agencies are always contacting Nevada debtors from the principal place of business, Are they relieved from complying with sections 23 and 24 and the associated sections in SB 276? These sections are for remote workers only and not for those working at the licensed commercial place of business. Therefore, compliance with sections 23 and 24 are only necessary for remote workers. Section 25 applies to all recorded calls, whether recorded from a remote location or at a principal place of business. If anyone wishes to offer comments on sections 18, 23, 24, or 25, now is the time to do so. Do we have anyone joining us by the web that would like to provide comment?
We have Robin from the web.
Okay, we're ready for your comment.
Yeah, Robin Szabo, Szabo Associates, Atlanta. R-O-B-I-N-S-Z-A-B-O. Your comment just clarified my question. I appreciate that. And thanks for allowing us to attend this discussion.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anyone that anyone else from the web that would like to provide comment?
We have no other web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
No commenters by phone.
Okay. Anyone here in Las Vegas? No. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Frederick, F-R-E-D-R-I-C, Wasser Spring, W-A-S-S-E-R-S-P-R-I-N-G. Name of our company is Lion Collection Services, Inc. And I have a question on item number 18, use of insured depositories. I understand the intent. We have insured depositories. We were just reviewed by the state of Nevada and got a satisfactory opinion. But my question is the following. Have you gone to the either the any of the insurance areas of the banks to determine whether a trust account which has commingled, and what I mean by commingled is multiple customer funds, not my funds or the, my company's funds, but multiple customer funds segregated, whether that is 250,000, I think the limit is 250, whether it's 250,000 per customer or 250,000 per account. Certainly, if I put my money in Silicon Valley Bank, it was FDIC insured. I think we know what the results of Silicon Valley Bank were a few months ago. Same thing with the credit union that you're proposing here.
Correct. And this, just to let you know, this regulation was already in current regulation.
I understand that, and I wouldn't have brought it up if it wasn't for the fact that so many banks recently have collapsed. And I know what I'm doing to keep my...
We're going to have to get back.
We'll have to get back to you on that, what the current FBO slash trust account are.
Okay. I know for mutual funds, it's per customer, but I'm not sure whether... FDIC insurance and FISLIC insurance and all the others are the same. So.
We'll get back to the actual answer, but in this kind of scenario for a collection agency, I don't know if that much money is actually staying in that account at all time for each customer either. I mean, because that's money going in and out constantly, correct? So.
Well, we're holding our funds generally 21 days and paying out our clients within 21 days. However, there's a lot of moving parts to that. One, how long it takes the mail to get the items. So in many of our large customers, we're now paying by wire transfer. What I'm doing to keep my balance below 250, because I don't know the answer, is my large accounts, I'm prepaying them. So that way I'm almost sure that my balances are below 250.
Okay.
But I don't know the answer as to whether if I was at 300,000, would I be at risk for 50,000 or is it 250,000 per account? We have some large accounts.
Okay. You have put your email address on the sign-in
sheet,
correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay, we will get back to you. All right, thank you, sir. Okay, not seeing any other questions here in Las Vegas. We will continue on. Let's see. All right, sections 26 and 27 requires the physical principal place of business of a licensee must be located in the United States and comply with NAC 649250, and collectors working from a remote location must be located in the United States. Section 28 provides the certification used to waive the compliance manager test must be satisfactory to the commissioner. Section 29 provides the division additional authorization to request information or documentation during an examination or investigation of an applicant or licensee or certificate holder. If anyone wishes to offer comments on section 26, 27, 28, or 29, now is the time to do so. Do we have any comments from that joined us by web?
We have no web comments.
Anyone that joined us by phone that would like to provide a comment?
We have no phone comments.
Anyone here that joined us in Las Vegas? Okay, not hearing or seeing any comments, we will continue. Section 30 requires the unique identifier license number and certificate number to be posted on the homepage of the collection agency's website or on a page that is clearly and conspicuously connected to the homepage or a link that clearly reveals its contents. Section 31 allows for a licensed debt buyer to share a single license with affiliated debt buyers if those affiliates are passive debt buyers and do not employ persons to collect claims and has prior approval from the division. If anyone wishes to offer comments on sections 30 or 31, now is the time to do so. Do we have any comments from the web?
We have no comments from the web.
Do you have any comments from those who joined us by phone?
We have no comments by phone.
Does anyone like to provide a comment here in Las Vegas? Okay. Not seeing or hearing any comments, we will now move on to item 4. Now we will open to public comment once more. If anyone would like to make additional comments, now's the time to do so. There is no need to restate a comment already made. Public comment will be limited to 3 minutes per person or less due to time constraints. Comments will first be taken from those web participants, then phone participants, and then we will take comment here in Las Vegas. For those who joined us virtually, please place an X in the chat or by calling the toll-free number on the agenda at 844-621-3956. Do you have anyone that would like to provide comment that joined us by web?
We have no web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
We have no comments by phone.
Anyone here in Las Vegas? Okay, yes, sir.
Am I required to repeat?
Yes. State your name again.
Frederick Wasser Spring, Lion Collection Services. Is there any provision or thought of with respect to a compliance manager of having any other means of becoming a compliance manager other than the exam given by the state of Nevada? I believe the gentleman behind me, ACA, has a compliance program. Somebody told me that that was a possibility of being approved.
In SB 276, it created a new exemption that instead of a compliance manager having to take a test, that they can use a certificate that is satisfactory to the commissioner for that. I can't find the section right now to read the exact language for the section. Let's see. But I do know there was something added in the Senate Bill 276 regarding that. So we will look at the certificate and see if it's in compliance. Let's see. But to answer your question, it's not a set. We don't have like a set company. We don't endorse a set company. Like you mentioned, ACA, we don't say you have to get an ACA certificate. It has to meet what the statute says, which I can't find the language. But I believe it says a nonprofit organization that has collection experience and expertise in collection agencies, okay. Something to that effect. You can always follow up if you're interested in that. You can always contact me or our licensing staff, and we'll see if the certificate that you're looking at would comply with the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was like, I can't find it. Okay, any other comments here in Las Vegas? Okay, not seeing or hearing any. Before we close the hearing, just as a reminder, if for those of you who joined in by web, if you can please sign in on the sign-in sheet in the chat box for us, that would be greatly appreciated for the record. And those that called in, if you please email fidmaster@fid.state.mb.us to request to sign that form. Okay, so we'll move on to item number 5 of the agenda. The workshop pertaining to Senate Bill 276 and Chapter 649 of the Nevada Administrative Code is hereby closed and adjourned on November 2nd, 2023 at 10:44 a.m. Thank you everyone for joining us today.